warm is and wait to see which one will they choose. This week in warm is to get chosen.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to This Week in Mormons, Twin Sisters Edition with Arianne Smith
and Tiffany Hales.
So we're happy to be back.
Yes.
It's been a while. Jeff and Al have been MIA, but I think they'll be back soon.
I hope so. So
in the meantime.
In the meantime, Twim Nation, the Twim Sisters are here for ya.
That's right.
All right. So it's been about a month since we last recorded. So why don't you talk about what has been going on in your life in the month of February?
Oh, all kinds of excitement. So, well, first of all, you know, we're preparing for baby. So
yes,
we've been shuffling rooms, and the 3-year-old who's almost 4 finally got potty trained, and she got a big girl bed, and she moved in with her sister and vacated the crib. It's just been all kinds of excitement.
I know. Big changes over here in the Smith household.
But our biggest thing in February was our girls had a winter break from school. So we went to California for a week. That is where my husband grew up in Southern California. So we still have some family down there. So we took the girls down for a week. We were hoping for beautiful 75 degree weather, which we did not get. And I feel a little guilty for complaining because it snowed here in Idaho. But we were like in the 40s and 50s with a freezing cold wind. I was like, this is not the California I have come to expect in February.
Well, the other thing too is you've got to explain the motivation to go to California.
Oh, right, right. So the whole purpose of this trip was we had told the girls many years ago, if we could finish the Book of Mormon as a family with our scripture reading every night, we would take them to Disneyland. Now, this has literally been at least 3 years ago.
A 3-year project to get to Disneyland. Holy cow.
Because we were reading, you know, 4 or 5 verses a few nights a week. Well, last summer, we kind of sat down and we thought, okay, if we want to make this happen, we knew they had
before everybody graduates from college.
Exactly. We got to step it up. And we knew they had this winter break in February. So we sat down last summer and we said, we did all the math and we calculated it out from where we were, where we had been lingering for many years in the front half of the Book of Mormon.
Well, I was going to ask, where were you lingering? Did you get lost in the Isaiah chapters?
Well, we lingered there a long time.
Who does not linger in Isaiah for a long time?
So we calculated it out and we had to read 2 full pages a day from like last summer all the way up until leaving day in February. And
we
only had maybe like a 5-day cushion to miss
days. Dang.
So we totally had to step it up. And it was like, it was super rough. I'm not going to say this was pretty. Like, we had some moments, but it was hard.
Well, and didn't you just get it in like right under the gun?
Oh, the night before we left was when we finished. So literally, we used up every single spare day we had, and it was the night before we left.
You know what, though? That is awesome. I mean, that is a great accomplishment because your kids are really young, and scripture reading is a struggle as a family, especially when your kids are really young. So, you know, even if you just do a couple of verses at night, you're just proof that if you hang in there,
that's true,
you can finish it.
We can do hard things.
You can do hard things. All right. Well, more about your California trip.
It was good. So it was great. So they got their day at Disneyland. We did one day at Disneyland, and we went hard. We went all day. We were there when it opened at 9, and we basically told the girls, we're going to get our money's worth, so we'll go till you drop. And so kind of the joke was my father-in-law came with us, who's 74. And so my husband and I kept joking, okay, who is going to poop out first? Grandpa, the pregnant lady, or the 3-year-old? We had 2 cars in case any party needed to leave early.
Okay, so who was the last, the first man not standing?
I am proud to say, as the pregnant lady, it was not me.
Yes.
I made it, but we were not far behind. Grandpa left probably about 8:30 p.m., and about an hour later, we were behind him. Our girls had claimed, we're going till midnight. We're going all the way till midnight.
So when Grandpa left, he left by himself. He did not take a child with him.
The 3-year-old was good.
Wow.
I was still doing okay. And then like about 9 o'clock, our girls were like, let's do one more ride and go home. And we were like, all right.
Perfect.
Works for us.
Okay, so 12 hours in Disneyland. I would definitely say that's your money's worth.
Oh, we got our money's worth, yeah. But the funny thing about Disneyland. Well, it's just crowded all the time.
Yeah, it doesn't matter when you go.
We've been in October, we've been in January, and now we've done like mid-February. It's always crowded now.
Yeah.
There's just not a good time. But I was cracking up because my husband and his dad both had their BYU gear on.
Uh-huh.
And I think this happened to us last time we went to Disneyland too. Somebody had a BYU hat on. But when you wear your BYU gear at Disneyland, you get all kinds of love.
Oh, snap.
Because people will shout like across the way from you, "I like your hat. I like your sweatshirt." It's like code for like, "I'm Mormon too."
Oh my gosh, that is hilarious.
So I thought it was so funny. When you live in Idaho or Utah,
yeah,
like nobody pays attention to BYU gear. And then you forget when
there's so much of it around here.
And you forget when you go out of state. It's like people get all excited, like, "Hey, go Cougars."
Okay, so that's kind of funny.
So, yes, there were some Mormons there that were loving the gear.
So did he purposely wear his BYU gear to get attention, or that's just
his
general form of clothing?
He just loves his BYU hat.
Well,
my father-in-law always wears either a BYU sweatshirt or a U of A sweatshirt.
Oh, okay. Well, they are very loyal.
Yes.
So we'll give them kudos for that.
Yes. So it was good. It was great. But I have to say, one other thing we did while we were down there was we went to San Diego for the day. And we went to the Mormon Battalion. Have you ever been?
I have never been to the Mormon Battalion.
So last time...
This is really bad. I didn't even realize that like the church had a site.
Yeah,
there.
They have this site. And I've been before, but last time we went was before we had kids. It had to be at least probably 12 years ago.
Okay.
Back when we lived in California. So this was our first time back in 12 years. And I don't know, Jeff has probably mentioned this on here before because I know he's from...
Southern California area.
California. So I don't know if he's mentioned this, but they have stepped up the Mormon Battalion site.
Really? Okay, so what goes on at the Mormon Battalion site?
So it is, they've totally switched it up. It is the most kid-friendly church history exhibit that I have seen ever.
Okay, so what about it was kid-friendly?
They just do this whole narrative where the sister missionaries kind of play along with these videos of historical characters, almost like they're interacting with each other, and they move you from room to room and do in each room a little bit of the history of the Mormon Battalion, and the rooms are all decked out in the period, and they have these videos with these characters, and they're kind of having you follow these characters, and the characters in the video are kind of speaking to you.
Yes.
It's just super. My kids were just enthralled.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was probably, I want to say the presentation was maybe 45 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad.
Half hour to 45 minutes to get through all the rooms and, and the videos and the history.
Okay.
And then at the end, you go into the courtyard and the kids can pan for gold in this little gold mining thing, and they can like pretend to make bricks in a fire, and they can wash on the old fashioned washboard, and they were super into that. They loved that.
Oh, very cool. Well, you know, what I thought was really cool is the same day that you were posting pictures on Facebook of your trip to the Mormon Battalion with your kids, our cousin Alicia, her daughter Riley, opened her mission call, and Riley's going to the Mormon Battalion. So shout out to soon-to-be Sister Smullen and the Mormon Battalion. So
I know. I bet it'd be a fun mission. I was asking the missionaries
when
we were there. I said, "Do you do this every day? Is this just, you know, a month of your mission?" And they said, "No, this is our mission." They said they do half a day at the Mormon Battalion, and then the other half doing other missionary things. So they either have the morning half or the afternoon half. But the whole time they're out, they are in the Mormon Battalion.
Wow. I think that would be a really fun mission. Almost as sweet as Temple Square. Because I really do think if you're a sister, that, you know, probably the primo mission has to be Temple Square mission. What could be more fun than that? All right.
Anyways, it was cool. If anybody who's going to Southern California, I recommend it, especially if you have small kids. It's way more entertaining than you would think it would be.
Okay.
So.
Well, and I think Riley reports some to the MTC sometime this June. So, you know, sometime in June, you can go down there and see our cousin's daughter.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, speaking of the 1800s, where the Mormon Battalion was set, we need to talk Trek.
Yes, we do. You are... waist deep
in
trek activity about now.
Well, and
prep for trek.
I don't think I've mentioned this on the podcast yet. That last, it was in about November of last year. My husband and I got called into the stake president's office. That's always a lovely phone call to get. And we were asked to be a monopaw on the upcoming stake trek this summer. We, of course, accepted. I have to admit, though, I'm a little bit terrified. I actually might even be on terrified. It might be mortified because this is not my first rodeo when it comes to trek. And I know exactly what I'm getting into because our stake does trek every 4 years. And so 4 years ago, we were part of trek. Now, we were not a monopaw. We were on the logistics crew 4 years ago. So we were kind of all of the behind the scenes sort of people. And you really don't think about what's involved in the logistics of trek until you're actually on the logistics crew. But in their hand carts, the kids only carry, each of them has a 5 gallon bucket in their hand carts that has their clothing and their personal items. All of their other gear, their tents, their sleeping bags, all of that is schlepped around by the logistics people to the various campsites that they're going to camp at. But in addition to that, you know, the logistics people have to have a medical crew.
Right.
They have to have cooking, and they have to get all of the food up there and keep it refrigerated.
Oh, my goodness.
You can't even imagine the amount of trash these kids generate per day, you know, and there's not a big dumpster to throw it in, so you've got to have logistics to get your trash out. They need ice blocks every morning for their big 5 gallon water containers, so you got to figure out how you're going to get your ice in there. And then you got to bus all the kids up there. So you got to figure out all your busing to get all of the kids to the trek site.
Holy cow.
I know. Now, fortunately, we have a place that we use. It's about 40 minutes from Boise. And it's a guy who has designed his ranch for trek. So they have the hand carts and everything there.
Right.
We don't have to worry about that. But what we did on the logistics crew last year, you know, or 4 years ago, I should say, you know, they try and match your talents with what they want you to do on the logistics crew.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not a medical personnel, so I clearly wasn't medical. You know, I'm a lawyer. Where are you going to put the lawyer on trek? Well, let me tell you where you're going to put the lawyer on trek. Since lawyers are generally full of crap, yes, that's what I did. My husband and I hauled the porta potties around on trek.
I remember that. I remember you were the porta potty hauler, and I was like, that's just something I never even thought of, but they have to have bathrooms.
Exactly. So these kids are traipsing all over the mountain, and so you have to have the porta potties kind of follow them. I mean, you can't follow them precisely, but you go to different locations where they're going to stop. So we pulled around this big old trailer that had, I think, 8 porta potties on it.
Oh, my goodness.
And then, you know, it had things that came down that the kids could, you know, walk up to the porta potties. But on these mountains, I mean, these porta potties are sloshing everywhere.
Ooh.
We also had to clean the porta potties.
You did?
Oh,
you didn't tell me that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So,
oh my goodness.
I
was going to say you had it cushy because you didn't have to do the hiking, but
no, we didn't have to do the hiking,
cushy.
But I did have to clean the porta potties. And let me tell you, our reputation from hauling the porta potties around still precedes us 4 years later. So this time we don't have to haul porta potties. We're mom paws, and you would probably think, oh, well, that sounds a lot easier than hauling porta potties. But I am just mortified of the hike. I'm like, oh, am I going to be able to do it? And not so much the hike as the women's pull is really hard. I'm really scared about the women's pull.
Right.
So
when you're a mom paw, do you pitch a tent?
So the way that they do it is each mom paw is responsible for having 3 tents. You have a tent for the mom, the paw.
Uh-huh.
You have a tent for your girls and a tent for your boys.
Okay.
Never the two shall meet.
Right.
So,
and you're positioned close enough you can keep an eye on.
Exactly.
Okay.
In theory, the mom paw tent is in the center.
Right.
Boys are on one side, girls are on the other.
Right.
And alas, you have to, you know, run hormone patrol.
Oh my goodness. Now, when you did porta potties, didn't you get to sleep in a trailer or something?
No.
Or just in the car?
Yeah.
No.
When we did porta potties, there was actually a space the first night at one of the cabins up at the ranch.
Oh.
So I got to sleep in a bed and I got a shower the next day. Darren was not very happy about that. He went to sleep outside. outside. So the next night there was not cabin space. And so we ended up just putting an air mattress in the back of the truck and slept in the back of the truck on the air mattress. But anyway, so yes. So right now we are knee deep in trek preparation. And for anybody who happens to see our twin sisters' Instagram site, I posted a picture probably about 10 days or so ago. We did a winter crossing because one of the things that they always do is we do a winter crossing across the Boise River because where we go for trek in the summer, there's no water for us to cross. Plus, they want to make it realistic. So we had our winter crossing a couple weeks ago. Now, you happened to send me this text, belly aching, on the day of the winter crossing.
I think that was the day I was on my way back from California.
Yes.
And I was whining about the weather.
You were belly aching that you did not have 75 degree weather. And I promptly replied to you that I was going out in 26 degree weather and snow to cross an icy river. And you said, okay, I'll quit belly aching.
Yeah.
And then you said, now, some leader is very delighted in the fact that this is realistic. And my response to that was, yes, and I'm married to that leader. So what we did is they had the kids get together. They had to do them in two groups because there were so many kids. They do a little devotional at the first, and then we go down by the river and across on the other side of the river. They kind of have a dramatic kind of reenactment of crossing the river. And then they have all of the kids cross from one side to the other. So first one out of the gate, my son Mark. All of a sudden I look up and I'm like, well, he's in the water.
He was excited about this,
He was excited about this. Now, crossing was not mandatory. It was optional.
So how many kids did it? Like, majority?
Pretty much everybody did.
Peer pressure.
Well, and I was going to say, when I said that crossing was not mandatory, it was optional. I should say it's not optional, though, if your husband is Darren Tanner. Yes. So, yes, I had to cross the river. So it probably came up to about my knees with the water. But I had this total dilemma before we went of what shoes do I wear?
Right.
Because, you know, it's cold and it's snowing. So, of course, I want to wear my boots. But I'm like, when I cross, water's going to get into my boots. So do I let the water just get into my boots and kind of slosh it out? Or do I take my boots off and sling them over my shoulder and put my water shoes on? Or do I go barefoot? I mean, there were just really no good options.
Yeah.
So I finally went with, I'm just wearing my boots and I'm going to slosh around in them.
So, and then afterwards you had a devotional?
We had a little fireside in the wards afterwards, and the bishops just kind of, but we were literally around a fire.
Okay.
And the bishop.
So did that warm you up a little?
It did. It did. What was really funny is, especially with the girls' skirts as they got close to the fire, you could see all the steam rising off from the wetness of the girls' skirts.
And it snowed like the whole time
you
were out,
right? It snowed the whole time, yes.
Which is crazy because we've had hardly any snow in Boise this winter.
Exactly.
It just came for you guys.
They prayed it and it came. So this does not speak well for what kind of extreme weather conditions we are going to endure this summer.
Oh my goodness.
Just to make this realistic.
So trek is, I've never really been involved in trek. It was after my time in Young Women's, and as an adult, I've managed to avoid it. My time that I have served in Young Women's, I've always been pregnant or otherwise.
Well, don't worry, sweetie. I'm sure in a few years, your time is coming.
So what is your take on it? Like, as far as your kids, like, is it a valuable experience? Like,
my kids, so 4 years ago when we went, our two, Shelby and Isaac, were old enough to go. So Shelby and Isaac went. This year, it'll be Lauren and Mark. Our kids loved it. And that is a universal feeling within the stake. The kids love it. You know, it's one of their highlights as a youth. They have a blast. It's so good for them. So, bottom line, it's a great experience for the kids.
So you have come around to pro trek now.
There are other things I'd rather do, but not going to lie here, but our theme for this year is rise up. So I fully intend, I've got to get my butt to the gym and get in gear. I fully intend to rise up to the challenge and have a good attitude about trek.
Well, there you go.
So,
okay, here's my other question about trek. This is just a Western thing, right? I mean, do stakes on the East Coast do this? There's no way they do, right?
I don't really know.
I mean, we have lived in California and Portland. And both of our stakes there.
Never did trek?
No, they did it every
4 years.
Every 4 years.
Okay.
And I can't remember if we did it in Indiana. We were only in Indiana for 2 years, so we weren't there really long enough to know. I'm just curious, does this happen on the other side of the Mississippi?
You know what? I think we're going to have to put this out to Twim Nation and say, you know, Twim Nation, who lives outside of the Western United States, do you all do Trek?
Do you do this? Do you think we're all crazy over here in the West?
or is this strictly a Mormon belt activity that happens in essentially Idaho, Utah, and Arizona? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
Anyway, but speaking of Trek, there is a new movie coming out, and it will be released on the 6th of April. Da-da-da-da. Important date in church history.
Oh, it's coming out this?
It's coming out this year.
I watched the preview, and I just thought it was way far off. I didn't realize it was coming out so soon.
We're a month away. So it's called Trek the Movie. It's a Mormon-themed, obviously, genre movie. And the key role is a gentleman or is a teenager named Tom. He does not want to go on Trek, and so his parents do what every good Mormon parent does, bribe him with a ski pass. You go on Trek, and we'll get you a ski pass. And, you know, we haven't seen it. I've just read some reviews. Apparently, it has some very colorful characters. There's a brother, Krabby, who is apparently an overzealous recent convert. And his job is to monitor two teenagers who keep sneaking away because they want to make out. And then we have Sterling. He is the perpetual hungry teen who hoards food and hides it because he can't get enough of it. And I'm afraid that may be my son on this year's trek, my son Mark. So
okay.
Anyway, I'm kind of excited. I do want to see it.
I'm crossing my fingers it's good. It has potential to be bad.
It does.
But you know what? That Girls Camp movie that came out.
Yes. Once I was a beehive.
I went in with like zero expectation for that because, you know, these Mormon comedy movies. I loved that movie. I thought it was a good movie. So well done and so cute and like so they hit on so many like funny girls camp things. I hope this one can be done as well.
Well, I hope so too. We'll see it and we'll return and report.
Yes.
Okay, so speaking of Girls Camp, Girls Camp has been in the news.
Yes, we have to talk Girls Camp.
Girls Camp.
This was kind of our big, exciting story of the week.
Yes.
Last week they announced, the Church Salt Lake announced that they are making some major changes to the Girls Camp program.
Yes.
The biggest changes are that they will be eliminating certification.
Hallelujah.
Girls Camp leaders all over are rejoicing, I'm sure.
Rejoice, rejoice, rejoice.
When my husband, like when we were talking about this article, he didn't even realize that there is certification.
Oh my gosh.
I said, yes, and it's every year there's a different thing, and it's so hard to coordinate. Like, if you're a first year, you have to do this. If you're a fourth year, you have to do this. I mean, I'm sure it compares nothing to the coordination of the scout certification, but it's a big old pain. So people are excited.
Well, and I swear to you, that Girls Camp manual has been around as long as anybody who is alive can remember.
Yeah, I don't think they've updated that much. So
anyway, so tell us what the new program will be.
So taking out certification and the other major change that they're making is they really want to emphasize that the youth are leaders of the camp. So the older girls, they really want the older girls to step it up as youth leaders and really be involved in actually planning the camp.
Yeah.
So they want this to be very specific to your ward needs, to your stake needs. So they're really leaving it pretty open-ended.
Yes, they're wanting you to pray and seek inspiration.
Right. So you can cater it to what your ward needs. And the wording on this was really interesting on this announcement. The wording, they said that they are doing this because camp is meant to be globally applicable for young women living in all different areas of the world.
Yes.
And they hit on the fact that not all young women are able to go out into nature, although that's ideal. But they said young women's camp can be held, you know, at the beach, in the woods, at a church building if it needs to be, in somebody's backyard if it needs to be. They're really just trying to make this more universal so it fits all over the church. And what I loved about this wording, right when I read the wording on this, ding, 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 little bells went off in my head just, you know, about Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts. And
because as you have said, with your impending pregnancy, we got 8 years to do something about the Boy Scouts.
I am on the countdown now that I'm having a boy. I have 8 years. And I'm hoping that this will be taken care of by
Well, you know, I can't help but think that this is probably one in a small step to revamp the young men and young women's programs. I mean, right. they've done that with the lesson material.
Right.
Now they're doing it with girls' camp. I can't help but think it's only got to be a matter of time.
Oh, it's only a matter of time.
Before changes are made in the young men's program.
Yes, yes, so. Yes. And, you know, I think I have very strong feelings about Scouts. I think it's a great program. Just, I don't think it fits with the church.
Yeah, yeah.
Go do it in your community with your school.
Exactly.
Anyway, that's a side note. Scouts.
Yes.
We'll see what happens there. But another thing I thought was interesting that they said about Girls Camp in this announcement is that there are many traditions that have been long held in camps, especially those that may not help accomplish the goals of Girls Camp.
Like running bras up the flagpole.
Right. And many that involve pranking.
Like running bras up the flagpole?
Yes. So they are hoping to kind of eliminate some of these traditions. It sounds like they're also wanting to eliminate some of the pageantry of it.
Yes.
They said that they want leaders to shy away from experiences that rely on emotion to try to force spiritual experiences through drama.
Yes.
And I thought that was a really good thing to put in there.
I like that too.
So, and they talked about sometimes young women, especially those just learning to respond the spirit, might think everybody's crying. Why am I not crying?
Yeah.
I'm not feeling the spirit. And
they're just learning to feel the spirit.
Right. And it points out everybody feels the spirit differently. But
yeah.
I mean, you know, girls camp is very famous for the testimony meeting on the last night where everybody's crying.
Yes, yes.
Which I don't necessarily think will go away. That might still be there.
Yeah, it probably will be.
But they're just encouraging leaders not to kind of produce the drama and relate it to a spiritual experience.
Yes.
Which I think was a really good thing to put in.
I liked that. And uh-huh. and just kind of on a concluding note of that, simply because certifications are going away, that doesn't mean that if the spirit so moves you, you could still learn to tie knots at girls' camp.
Oh, right. And they put this in there too. They said that they hope that those skills will still be part of camp.
Yes.
And I just think it will make it easier because you won't have the different levels and years.
Exactly.
Everybody together can learn first aid.
Yeah.
Everybody together can learn, you know, the knot tying and the survival. And you won't have to worry about checking off a list for whatever age you are.
Well, and if you've got a small group of girls, that's really hard to divide them up like that. You know, that division works really well if you've got a stake camp that has 300 girls in it.
It's really tricky in ward camp.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And I've lived in wards where they've had us do a lot of the certification before camp.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just to get it out of the way.
Exactly. Yeah. Same thing. So, I was girls camp advisor in our ward for 3 years. And that's exactly what I did is I'm like, well, what can we do prior to camp so that I don't have to deal with it up there?
Right. So anyways, I think it's going to be a really great change.
Well, and I have to say, I showed this to my daughter who is 17 and she will be a girls camp leader this summer, one of the youth leaders. And she was giddy. She loved the idea. She said it's about time. She was very happy.
Right. And I'm super curious to see if they go ahead and do it this summer. They didn't put a release date.
No. I think they just said sometime later this spring, but they didn't give a specific date.
So I'm assuming it'll go into effect this summer, at least parts of it. There might be stakes that have already chosen their theme and have already started moving.
Yeah.
But I guarantee once they hear the certifications out, they'll be like, okay,
let's revamp. All right. So our next story that we want to talk about a young woman by the name of Tara Westover. And she's gotten a lot of press in the last few weeks for a book that she wrote called Educated. And it's a memoir, basically, of her childhood and growing up. I think she's about 30 right now. And so she grew up over in eastern Idaho, right kind of along the Utah border, in a house that's at the base of this mountain called Buck's Peak or Bucks Pike, I think. Mm-hmm. And she grew up they referred to it as a fundamentalist Mormon family. And a lot of times when you think fundamentalist, you think polygamy. Right. She was not part of a polygamist family. They attended a regular ward.
It sounds like they went to a mainstream Mormon ward.
They did. They went to a mainstream Mormon
they
ward.
They were not your typical.
No. They were doomsday preppers. Mm-hmm. And so her father was always very scared that the federal government was going to come in. And so they were stockpiling ammunition and food. And they had a bag, they called it a head for the hills bag, so that if they felt like they were getting raided by the government, they'd grab their head for the hills bag.
And homeschooled all their kids.
Homeschooled all their kids. No doctors.
They just were very private and didn't want anybody involved.
Exactly. So she was the seventh of the kids. She was the youngest. And so she said, you know, by the time her mother got to her, really there was not a lot of homeschooling going on. You know, schooling was kind of like what she could figure out or, you know, pick up a book and read. But she is clearly a very bright individual. She had a brother who had attended BYU, and he encouraged her to attend BYU. So she had this job where she worked, I think, as an accountant or a bookkeeper part-time. And so she took some of that money and she went and bought a book on math and taught herself this enough math that she could do really well on the ACT. And so she took the ACT and she got into BYU.
Right.
So her first formal schooling is at BYU as a freshman. And she's sitting in a class and they start talking about the Holocaust. And she raises her hand and she says, "What is that?" And everybody thought she was making fun of the Holocaust because nobody could believe she had no idea. And so she just talks about how once she kind of broke away from her family, how she just kind of became educated and, you know, some of the things that she learned just kind of being dumped into this environment after having been sheltered. And one of the other things that she talks about is she talks about abuse in her family. And she doesn't talk about sexual abuse, but physical abuse. She specifically involving her brother. When she was 16, he had seen her put on some lip gloss, and it infuriated him. And so he grabbed her by the hair and drug her down the hall. On another occasion, he broke her wrist. He flushed her head in a toilet.
Right.
I mean, he was just
so sad.
He was very abusive. And she never really discussed these issues with her parents until she got much older. And when she discussed these issues with her parents and his abuse and she was kind of dismissed by her parents.
Right.
They said, "Oh, you know, we don't want to hurt his reputation." And her, you know, her claims weren't taken seriously, which we've also seen that a little bit in the news. But, you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed about her book, and she has subsequently left the church, is, you know, she says she did an interview with NPR. And she says in this interview in NPR, she says, "Look, I'm not Mormon anymore, but I have lots of relatives who still are, and I respect that, and I respect them, and I respect their decision, and I don't have hard feelings against the church." And she says the same thing about her parents and her brother, who was so abusive. She says, "You know, look, I wish things were different. They're not going to be. You know, there are members of my family that I still have contact with, and members that I don't. You know, some of them have chosen not to have contact with her, but I just, it was very interesting to see her take on kind of not being a victim, having grown up in this situation.
It was. I listened to the NPR interview and it was so fascinating. I mean, if anybody has any reason to be bitter and kind of throw that bitterness towards the church or towards her parents, it would be her. But I was amazed at her just, you know, ability to set it aside and still maintain healthy boundaries, but not be bitter.
Exactly.
So, and she's gone on, where did she go to grad school? Was it
Cambridge?
Harvard? Cambridge.
And she lives in England now.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, I know you're going to go try and get on the list at the library for the book. So.
I know. I really want to read the book after listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
It was just fascinating. I highly recommend. Good podcast to listen to.
Exactly. So after you're done, I want it.
Okay.
Okay. Moving on.
All right. What do we have next? Oh, the next, we have another Mormon movie to talk about.
I know. We are full of Mormon movies today.
Gotta love that Mormon cinema. So they just announced recently at the end of February that they will be making a sequel to The Other Side of Heaven. which
so happy
is probably one of the most famous Mormon films that actually, you know, went outside of Utah.
Exactly.
Went national.
Yeah, and what's uh-huh. interesting is it was kind of at the beginning of that Mormon film genre.
Right.
The Mormon film genre really started with God's Army. And this was really the second movie that was released after God's Army. It was released on DVD by Disney, but Disney wasn't the original company that released it. They picked it up on DVD, I think in large part because it had Anne Hathaway right. in it, and she had just done Princess Diaries, and so they were right. trying to cross promote her in several different movies.
That's right. But I think I remember seeing it in the theater.
Oh yeah, it was definitely in the theater.
We were living in California at
oh,
the time.
Oh really? Okay.
And it was like a big deal.
Oh, okay.
That this was going to be in the theater because it was the story.
Yeah.
So you all probably all remember the story. This was in, I think it came out in 2001, but it was the story of Elder Groberg's mission to the islands
yes.
and some of the challenges he overcame. Very faith promoting, inspiring, and of course it had Anne Hathaway. So.
Of course.
So they're doing a sequel, which
yes.
Until I read this article, I had no idea that there was more to the story.
Yes.
You had listened to the podcast with Elder Groberg.
Yes, Elder Groberg did a podcast with Kurt Frankum at Leading LDS. And I
right.
kept telling you, I'm like, you got to listen to this podcast. It's so good.
And I still need to listen to it. If I would have listened to it, I would have realized there is more to the story.
Yes.
So he went back. He got called back to
as a mission president.
The mission president after he had wife and kids.
Yes.
Same island. Right?
Yes.
So that is the sequel they'll do, is like his family going back.
Exactly.
And some of the challenges. And they've got almost all of the original actors.
They
from
do.
From the original film. Not Anne Hathaway.
Well, you know.
Not that we're surprised.
I think her calendar was full. Scheduling conflicts.
I know. Anyway.
But the original actor who played Elder Groberg
right.
in the first movie will return and play Elder Groberg in this movie.
That's right.
And they have an actress from New Zealand that they have cast as his wife, Jean. And she bears a striking resemblance to Anne Hathaway. She's got the dark brown long hair and big puppy dog eyes.
Okay.
So
I haven't seen any pictures of her yet. So yes, I think they're starting to film in April.
Yes.
So who knows when it'll be released.
I think they said scheduled for release in April 2019.
A year from now. Anyway, really cool that they're doing another. And it was interesting in the article, I didn't realize this, but Elder Groberg talked about in this article about how President Monson was the one that really encouraged him to write down his stories in the first place.
He did.
And then after they were written down and he made the movie, Elder Monson, after he saw the first, or President Monson, after he saw the first movie, said, well, where's the next one? Because he knew there was more to the story.
Exactly.
So Elder Grover just kind of talked about how this is very meaningful to him, not only because it's telling his story, but in a way he feels like President Monson would have
approved
to see this happen.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, that's interesting about President Monson, and again, this was in the interview that Elder Groberg gave to Kurt Frankum, he talks about, you know, I believe he was Elder Monson at the time, not President
right.
Monson, said to him, you need to write these stories down.
Right.
Well, he probably was President Monson because he was in a first presidency for
counselor.
Years.
Yeah.
So we'll call him President Monson. And so he really said, you need to write these stories down. And Elder Groberg went, yeah, I'll get to that. You know, much like we do when we're writing our own personal history.
Right.
Yeah, I'll get to that. And Elder Monson, or President Monson, kept pushing him. And finally, President Monson said to him, a year from today, I expect to see a manuscript on my desk.
Oh, wow.
So Elder Groberg went, oh, I guess he's serious about that. I better start writing some things down.
Oh, that's funny.
And so hence became he actually wrote two different books. The one that The Other Side of Heaven is based on. And I think the second book he wrote is Faith by Fire, something along that line. Uh-huh. And that's what the second movie is going to be based on.
Okay. Very interesting. So yes, we hope it'll be great. It's got a big budget and they're going on location to film. So it's got good potential.
Yeah. They're
going to
film in Fiji. So if you want to be an extra in the film, go get your passport and head over to Fiji. Although I'm assuming if you want to be an extra in the film, you're probably going to have to look Polynesian.
Probably.
probably not a lot of room for white Caucasian actors.
Probably.
All right.
Okay,
so,
what's next?
our next story, we are going to talk about a gentleman by the name of Rob Porter. He was in the news during the month of February. He had a kind of a high-ranking sort of policy position in the Trump administration, and my understanding is he was raised Mormon. His marriages were both temple marriages, but he has subsequently left the church.
Oh.
But what came up was apparently there was some sort of a tabloid magazine in England who began kind of, I mean, I'm sure they were investigating other people other than Rob Porter, but they started investigating members of the Trump administration.
Uh-huh.
And one of Rob Porter's former wives had filed a civil protection order against him. And that, of course, is public information. And so the tabloid got a hold of that and then kind of began digging deeper. And it came out that both of his wives were victims of spousal abuse, of
right.
domestic violence. And it was really interesting because the wives were not the ones who went out there publicly telling this story. It kind of got dug up, and then they kind of had to, you know, either let the tabloid run
right.
and say whatever they were going to run, or at least give their own side of the story. So
right.
his first wife was a woman by the name of Colby Holderness, and they were married in 2003, and I believe they divorced by around 2007, 2008, somewhere in there. And what she said is she reported that he had emotionally and physically abused her, choked her repeatedly, and in one instance punched her in the face, leaving a black eye.
And that was the picture we saw.
Yes, that
all
was
over the news.
That was the picture we
all
saw.
All the major news outlets.
All over the news. And mm-hmm. then his second wife was a woman by the name of Jeannie Willoughby. And this is the one who filed the civil protection order. And what had prompted her to file the civil protection order was they were separating at the time. And I don't know if she'd kicked him out of the house or locked him out of the house or mm-hmm. something along that line. And he punches the front window in the door in because he's so angry and upset. And so, but in addition to that, she also suffered the physical and the emotional abuse as well. Now, he, of course, denied it. He said, you know, these abuse accusations, he calls them part of a smear campaign. And this is a really touchy subject, you know, kind of for a
right.
number of reasons. You know, first of all, I was a prosecuting attorney for 8 years, and I prosecuted a lot of domestic violence cases. And there is a lot of different dynamics that go on in domestic violence cases between victims, between abusers, and, you know, a lot of times the abusers really I honestly believe Rob doesn't think he did anything wrong.
Right.
Because quite often the abusers in their mind think, well, you know, she doesn't have a broken bone. She didn't go to the emergency room.
Right.
We were just having a fight like all couples do, not realizing that the emotional abuse and the pushing and the shoving and all of that is domestic violence. And,
right.
and what happens is it's those smaller things that then lead up to the incidents where somebody ends up in the hospital. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because the women also say they didn't really recognize or define it because both of them went to their bishops and were trying to explain to their bishops what was going on in their marriage. And had a difficult time articulating to their bishops about, you know, what was going on in their marriage. They weren't, it's not that they weren't forthcoming. They just really didn't know how to articulate specifically the exact nature to their bishops of what was going on. When the second wife, Willoughby, was considering filing the restraining order, her bishop counseled her and said, you know, hey, if you file this protective order, you know, this could harm his career. Of course, the church has a policy that abuse in any form is not tolerated.
Right.
And I don't think the bishops in this case at all, you know, were tolerant of the abuse. I think the bishops were probably just didn't have adequate training to be able
right.
to understand and spot the signs of domestic abuse and understand why a victim of domestic abuse just can't spit it out and say, this is what happened to me. Because of all of the emotional abuse and the isolation and everything that right. goes with it.
And when there's not like a physical evidence.
Exactly.
It makes it much more gray area.
Exactly.
Hard to understand.
Exactly. And so, and the wives also, you know, didn't blame the bishops. They said, you know, look, the handbook just doesn't offer instructions on how to spot spousal abuse, how to determine or discern certain types of spousal abuse, and how to talk to the abuser about it. And so, you know, as a result, you know, the abuse that they had when they brought it up with church leaders was kind of downplayed or minimized. Again, I don't think through any fault of the church leader, and I don't think through any fault of the women, because I think they had a difficult time as being a victim, specifically articulating until they were able to get away from the situation, right. and then they got more clarity on
really
the situation.
Really realized what was going on.
Yeah. But, you know, it does really bring to light that, and I noticed this as a prosecutor, domestic violence is not limited to any sort of socioeconomic class. Right. It is one of those things that, you know, it does not matter if you're wealthy, educated, poor. Domestic violence crosses over all of those lines and is no respecter of class.
Right. So interesting. And it's interesting the conversations that this has sparked.
Yes.
People have all kinds of emotions about yes. this, and there have been many stories that have come yes. out. I think some people were calling it somebody dubbed it like the Mormon Me Too moment.
Yeah.
Like this is happening and this happens. And so we listened to, on our road trip, a really good podcast. It was just kind of a panel discussion about this from Mormonland.
Uh-huh.
It was, they kind of had a council together, and it said what, the title of it was, what counsel, if any, should LDS bishops give to spouses in abusive marriages? Because something that came out with all these stories online is that bishops are encouraging you to stay together, and
yes.
maybe they shouldn't be.
Well, and you know, and again, I mean, that, you know, we have a very large emphasis on family and
right.
marriage in our church.
Right.
You know, nobody doubts that, you know,
right.
but at some point in time, you know, is it appropriate to separate? Is it appropriate to get counseling so you can stay together?
Right.
You know, where do those lines go? Where are they drawn?
Right. So this podcast on Mormonland was really interesting. They had a former bishop and they had a former Relief Society president on this panel that uh-huh. they kind of interviewed. And then they also had a therapist. They had Julie Hank De Azevedo.
De Azevedo. It's Julie De Azevedo Hanks.
Oh, De Azevedo Hanks.
Yes,
yes.
Because she's Lex's
right.
daughter.
You're right.
Yes.
So they had her as a therapist perspective, and they all kind of discussed the issue. And, you know, the bishop shared some of what he'd
yeah.
seen. The Relief Society president shared some of what she had seen. And Julie shared, you know,
yeah.
from her therapist perspective. It was really interesting to hear them discuss.
Yeah.
And the Relief Society president said, you know, in her time as Relief Society president, she did have women come to her and confess that
yeah.
there was some of this going
yeah.
on, and say to her, should I go to the bishop? And she said her advice was always, no, don't go to the bishop. Go see a counselor, like go see
oh,
a professional.
Oh, interesting.
Just, that was her advice as the Relief
yeah.
Society president, was you don't need to get the bishop involved. You need like law enforcement or a professional counselor who
oh,
knows how to handle this. And I thought
that's a good answer.
I thought that was really good perspective from her
yeah.
as the Relief Society president
yeah.
to advise that. And it's tricky because we do go to the bishop a lot, but
exactly.
there are a lot of things the bishop isn't trained for.
Yeah.
And they just pointed that out in
yeah.
this podcast. Bishops are not trained. They said they do have, you know, an abuse
yeah.
hotline they can call. But I really think a lot of the emphasis of that abuse hotline has been towards the children.
Sexual abuse.
Which
yeah.
they've totally stepped
yeah.
up the training
exactly.
in that area for
yeah.
bishops as
yeah.
far as this is what you do.
Yeah.
You call right away. But
yeah.
I don't necessarily think they've had a ton of training.
For domestic violence related.
For domestic violence. So it was interesting to hear that perspective. And, you know, part of me thought, I'm sure a lot of people go to the bishop because they are in the situation and they aren't recognizing it as full-blown abuse. Yeah. Maybe they're just feeling if they go to the bishop can set their husband.
Exactly. Set him straight.
Give him some guidance. Yes. And lead him back.
Yes.
But, you know, and if they're not recognizing that it is, the bishop may not be recognizing exactly what it is. So anyway, it was just a really interesting panel discussion. So we'll have to link to it so people can go listen.
Yes.
It was a good podcast.
And another interesting thing that one of Rob Porter's ex-wives, I think it was Jeannie Willoughby, said, you know, she said he is great at his job. You know, when he is in his work environment, he's great at his job. And so then that brings up an interesting question. So you have an individual who in their personal life has some things that, you know, maybe amiss or off, but in their professional life, and you know, domestic violence isn't one of those things. I mean, he's not going to go beat up Trump.
Right.
You know, in his professional life, he's very capable and very able to do his job. You know, how do you reconcile the private behavior with the personal or with the professional,
right,
where the two, where there's no crossover that one impacts the other.
Which I think is why so many people were defending him at first in the other politicians and people in the administration, because they just couldn't wrap their head around it.
Exactly. Well, and he was very good at his job, you know? And so anyway, that's a whole different question for another day of, you know, simply because someone is a bad actor in one thing, do we throw the umbrella around them and say, well, they're just a bad seed entirely? Because I don't think that's the case. I think people are complicated. But it raises all sorts of very interesting, thought-provoking issues.
Yes, it's very complicated.
Complicated is the best way to describe it.
But it was, it was pretty heavy in the news feed for a couple weeks there. I think the news cycle has since moved on.
Yes, I think which is probably a good thing. But if the discussion surrounding domestic violence and how we as members respond to other members who are involved in domestic violence, you know, in their lives, you know, if that discussion continues and there's improvements made, then I say that's great.
Yeah, I think it's great too. And, you know, getting it out there, discussing it, helping bishops know what
exactly
to do.
Exactly. All right, moving on.
Okay, what do we have? Oh, this next article was kind of fun. This was on LDS Living earlier this week. This was about a DNA test that somebody had done who was LDS. They had done, you know, your typical Ancestry.com DNA test. They had been adopted and found a match for their biological father. So,
Oh my.
I know. You hear about this happening with these DNA tests. But this was actually a Mormon. She was adopted in the 60s through LDS Adoption Services, adopted by an LDS family, and now in her late 40s did this DNA test, found her biological father. They corresponded, wrote to each other.
How did she get a hold of her biological father? I mean, does she like call him up? Did she write him a letter?
She sent him a letter and he sent one back. He had no idea that she existed because he had had a one night stand with her biological mother, and the mother never told him that she got pregnant. So the biological father was LDS, had gone on to raise a family, married in the temple, had four or five kids of his own. And all of a sudden gets this letter from this child.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
No idea he had. So this was a fascinating story to me. So they've just embraced, you know, he met her. She met all of her half-siblings who are his kids. And they've just kind of embraced each other and, you know.
Well, and the other thing, too, that I liked in the article is she says, you know, this does not take away from my adopted family and all of the wonderful things that my parents gave me that I have with my siblings. This is just kind of like more love to go around.
That's right. Okay. So very interesting. Those DNA tests.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So our last news story is about two temples that are going to be dedicated later this year that the church has announced. The first one is in Concepcion, Chile. I know I probably horribly pronounced that. And that temple is scheduled to be dedicated on Sunday, October 28th. They will have an open house that will begin. It looks like the open house is going to begin on September 15th and conclude on Saturday, October 13th. So book your tickets right now to Chile if you want to go down there and tour the temple for the open house. But the most interesting thing about this announcement is they are not doing a cultural celebration for this temple. They have a devotional that is scheduled for the youth on Saturday, the day before, when typically a cultural celebration would happen.
And they have like really good culture to celebrate.
They got culture to celebrate.
To show off.
Unlike the Meridian Temple, where we called it the "We have a culture, I'm sure of it" celebration.
I wonder if this is a thing or if this is just for them.
Well, no, because when about a month later, they're going to dedicate a temple in Colombia. And the same thing with the temple in Colombia. They're having a youth devotional Saturday, December 8th, the day before the temple dedication. Mm-hmm. And the temple dedication is Sunday, December 9th.
Wow.
Now, these are the first temples to be dedicated under the new Nelson administration.
Oh.
All of the other temples were dedicated under the Monson administration.
Right.
And so it kind of makes you wonder,
Are they phasing it out?
Yes. Are they phasing out these cultural celebrations? Because we know these cultural celebrations were a huge deal to President Monson.
Right.
And maybe President Nelson feels a devotional is more appropriate.
Maybe.
So anyway, I think that's very interesting. So I think what we'll have to do is, as other temple dedications are announced, see if they have cultural celebrations or if they're just going to have devotionals.
Time will tell
on that.
Very interesting. Okay, I think that was it for our news articles.
So let's talk about our favorite things.
Okay, let's see our favorite things for the week. Should I go first?
Yes, why don't you go first?
Okay, my favorite thing this week is a recipe.
Oh.
On one of my favorite food. I think I have professed my love on here before for my two favorite Mormon food blogs, Mel's Kitchen Cafe and Our Best Bites.
Yes.
So this is a recipe.
Because you're the stalker of Our Best Bites.
Yes, I'm the stalker of Our Best Bites. I would stalk Mel's Kitchen Cafe too, but she lives too far.
Where does she live?
Middleton. Not very far, but far enough that I'd never go there.
Like, she lives here in Idaho, Middleton?
She's in Idaho too.
Get out of town.
Yes, they both.
Oh, you have no excuse not to stalk.
They both happen to be in Idaho. I'm not driving to Middleton.
Are you kidding? Seriously, it's like 15 minutes away. Oh my gosh.
Anyways, I really love Mel's Kitchen Cafe.
Okay.
I've tried so many recipes on her site, and there's maybe only one that I haven't put in my file to repeat because I love her recipes so much.
Now, I haven't tried anything from her.
Oh, you've got to try her recipes. Okay. They're just no fail. Like, she never fails me.
Okay.
So this is just one of her recipes that I love, and I do it quite a bit. It's an Asian chicken lettuce wrap recipe.
Okay.
So I know you're like me with the Asian food. You're very picky.
Yeah. You and I, we're not big lovers of Asian
food. We're not. We're kind of like, I'm like a American. Like, P.F. Chang's is like about as adventurous as I get.
You know, someday on this podcast, we're going to have to discuss our weird food quirks.
We have weird stuff.
We have weird food. I blame
and
our mother.
They're all the same. So it's genetic or something.
I think it's totally genetic.
So anyway, so these are very similar to the chicken wraps at P.F. Chang's, which is an appetizer I love. So they're just made with ground chicken, and you wrap it in lettuce with a little bit of rice. Or you could do no rice if you're doing low carbs. Anyway, I just like this recipe. It's very refreshing, and I like it when I've had a lot of junk and I need to feel like I need to eat something healthy.
Okay, will your kids eat this?
No, I was going to say, disclaimer, my children hate this meal.
Okay.
So when I make it, I do have to mentally prepare that my kids are going to whine and probably not eat dinner and go to bed hungry.
Okay.
But if I want it and I'm craving it, it's worth it.
There you go.
So.
Yeah, because I'm sitting here looking at this going, yeah, I'm pretty sure if I threw that on a plate at my house, I would be a kind of a no-go with several of them.
Yeah, no, this is one of my kids' most hated meals. So, you know, they always whine. But I like it. It's one of my favorite recipes of hers. It's just light and pretty healthy.
Okay, well, I'll have to try that because, you know, I gotta get in health mode here because I gotta get prepared for track. All right. So my favorite item of the week I brought with me tonight, and we have been, well, we ate them before we recorded, right, when we were organizing, but we haven't eaten them during the podcast. It is, alas, Easter is upon us in about a month, less than a month.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, that means Cadbury mini eggs.
Oh, they're the best.
Okay, out of all of the holidays, Easter candy is by far my favorite holiday for candy.
Easter has the best candy.
It really does. You know, and I know that they sell these Cadbury mini eggs at Christmas. Only they're not eggs, they're round.
Oh, the little balls.
The little balls. But I'm sorry, I just don't think they taste the same if they're not in pastel colors. There is something about them being in pastel colors that affects the flavoring.
Yes, love Cadbury mini eggs.
And I am a traditionalist. I like the milk chocolate. They also come in dark chocolate now. And do you remember last year we tried, I think it was a cookies and cream.
It was a cookies and cream, and they weren't so great.
I know, they had really vibrant colors.
The colors were gorgeous. They need to put the cookies and cream colors on the regular eggs.
They really do, because they were very vibrant colors, but the cookies and cream, I could only eat about two before they made me sick.
Yeah, it was too much white chocolate.
Yeah, they were a little disappointment. So yes, Cadbury mini eggs along with, and I know this is controversial, but I really like Peeps too. I am a big fan of the Peeps. Peeps are one of those things, either you love them or you hate them.
It's a love-hate. I can do one or two Peeps in Easter season.
Oh,
my girls love Peeps.
I can do Peeps, no problem. I think myself and Katie, I think we're the only ones in my house that like Peeps.
We'll eat them.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. So I'll put them in the other kids' basket and then say, hey, hand them over to Mom if you don't want them.
But I like all the different flavors of jelly beans.
Oh,
like jelly beans have totally stepped it up from when we were kids.
It's not just the Brock's eight flavors.
Now they have those Starburst. Yeah, they're good.
Exactly. So yes, Easter candy is upon us. So I'm going to encourage everybody to go out and feast upon the Easter candy.
Eat your fill. You got a month left.
Exactly.
All right.
I think that about wraps it up for us tonight. So, Twim Nation, thank you very much for joining us. This is Tiffany Hales.
And Ariane Smith.
And
we'll see you
later.
Time.
Bye.
All right, bye.
This week in Mormons. This week in Mormons. This week in Mormons. This week in Mormons. The original Mormon news podcast. This week in Mormons. Oh, 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 oh. This week in Mormons. The original Mormon news podcast.